I'd like you, if you would, Ken, to give me a few examples of texts, of ideas, of themes in the Bible that you use as part of your eco-justice workshop. You say you look at these texts and you find some different meanings or different understandings. You see them in a different way. So how about opening up our eyes a little bit?
Okay, well, let me start by making perhaps a sort of a contrast between a text that you referred to and some of the other texts that I might emphasize. There in Genesis, in that creation story, in the first chapter of Genesis, the first of the two creation stories, the story sort of culminates in a way with the creation of human beings. And there's a lot of emphasis there on the humans being created in the image of God and given some sort of dominion, let's say, over the rest of creation. The emphasis on that passage and on that verse in particular, which is in Genesis 1:28, is one of the reasons why people have noted critically that the Bible may be part of the problem that makes it hard for us to address ecological issues. And I think that that text is there, and there are some problems about it. On the other hand, if one went to a text such as Psalm 104, for example, Psalm 104, it's not a short text. It's a rather long psalm, very beautiful text that does also talk about nature and creation, but does so in a way that includes humans, but that gives human beings a somewhat limited role. The humans are there. They get to have a place to live. They get to have food, but so do all of the other creatures. The lions are there too, and the goats have a place to live, and so forth. And so if one tried to figure out what the biblical view of the relationship between the human beings and the rest of creation or nature was from Psalm 104, one would come away with a very different picture of the role of humans that would be, I think, a little less exalted, that would not emphasize the image of God, but would rather understand God to be concerned with the whole of creation and would understand God being as concerned about the other animals alongside human beings. And in fact, that perspective, I think, can be found in other parts of the Bible as well. Psalm 36, for example, says of God, "You save human and animals alike." Now, I have not myself ever heard a sermon on what it means when the Bible says that God saves the animals. But there you have that sort of text in the Psalms that do talk about that. Similarly, we have texts from Isaiah that talk about God doing new things, not only for humans, but also for wild animals. There are a number of texts scattered throughout the Bible that I think people don't think enough about the implications of. For example, in the book of Exodus, when God saves the Israelites but destroys the firstborn Egyptians, one of the things that I don't think is often noticed is that the Israelite animals are also explicitly saved with the Israelites, whereas the Egyptian animals, the firstborn Egyptian animals, die with the firstborn Egyptians. Now, that's, you know, somewhat a troubling text in itself, but the way in which the text does not differentiate between human and animal, I myself find quite striking. It also reminds us, perhaps, of the book of Jonah. There's a scene in the book of Jonah where this great Assyrian city of Nineveh is repenting. They're praying and fasting and putting on sackcloth, which was part of the ritual of praying and fasting. And they can't let their animals eat either, and they put sackcloth on the animals. So the ways in which we draw a sharp line between human beings and the rest of nature, the rest of creation, I think that there are quite a number of biblical texts that undermine the sharpness of that distinction. And I think it's important to call attention to those texts precisely because one of the things that has sometimes been said about the Bible as a problem for ecology is that it is supposed to be so much more interested in human salvation alone or human well-being alone as opposed to the rest of creation.